Welcome to the Maverick Way Radio Hour. Welcome to the Maverick Way at South by Southwest. This is our first shoot here at South by Southwest. We're having a great time. I'd like to welcome Jed Royer from Challenge Star to our on-site studio here. So, Jed, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Blaine. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, awesome. So, I noticed you got these awesome orange t-shirts and...
We did this just so that you could find them. If you left them under the bed or lost them in the closet, you'd have no trouble locating them.
Excellent.
But it's been great. My background's branding, marketing. I was always the art department working with the markers and stuff. So branding and establishing a brand has always been very important to me.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you last night was easy to find you
at right.
the opening
in the
party. I'm like, right. I'm looking for the three orange shirts, and I zoomed right in on you.
Perfect.
So
perfect.
Tell me about Challenge Star. What do you do?
So Challenge Star is a mobile app, and basically it's kind of a rhetorical question. Have you ever liked a photo on social media before?
Of course.
Well, what if you could put $1 or $2 on that photo instead of just liking it? And that's really our mission. We believe, what if that photo was actually championing a cause that was maybe something more meaningful underlying it, such as raising money for my sister who has, you know, terminal cancer and rising hospital bills, or maybe the local Boy Scouts club, etc. With Challenge Star and our platform, you can create challenges. You can create a challenge of any theme. I'll give you the low-hanging fruit, funniest selfie, craziest photo bomb, best Halloween costume.
Mm-hmm.
You create the challenge and people post up along that theme. So you get a nice long scroll of similar content. Next to each is a pledge button. So now people can incentivize their networks, their friends and family to come. And instead of just giving them a like and giving them approval that way, they can throw $1, $2, $5. And it becomes this micro donating, micro fundraising platform opportunity.
Cool.
All to support the underlying cause.
Yeah, so it's a little bit like the crowdfunding stuff.
That's correct.
But this is a really cool, interesting twist.
Yeah, we hope so. I mean, you had the ice bucket challenge that came through. We saw that thing coming. That was actually being used by the fire community. A lot of people don't even know that. So the firemen were using that, and they were using YouTube as a platform throughout that year. That was 2014. My brother's a fireman, and he was visiting in the summer, and we've been building this thing for like a year and a half by that point.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned something to me, and this was July, about a month before the thing took off for ALS. And he says, oh, I think I'm going to do the ice bucket challenge. And I'm like, What are you talking about? Hold on just a second. Let's back up. And all of a sudden, he starts showing me YouTube and all these firemen calling out, you know, I'm calling out Lieutenant Royer from Hazmat 13s and da-da-da, Blaine from, you know, Fire Engine 6s, you know, et cetera,
sure.
et cetera. Same thing. $10 to do it, $50 if you don't do it, $50 or $100. And the next thing you know, somebody, people that were affected, the two people that were from, like, Boston and New York that were affected by the disease of Lou Gehrig's, must have seen it. They used it. And named ALS as the benefactor of it. But the interesting with it was, I mean, it went viral. I mean, as soon as Matt Lauer did it, it just blew up.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. It was everywhere.
It was everywhere.
And they made a lot of money. They really got a lot of donations from that.
$117 million. In 3 weeks.
Oh, I had no idea it was that much.
It was massive. So
wow.
And the ALS had nothing to do with it ahead of time. I mean, all they've really been doing is kind of trying to present the story after the fact, because they never knew about it ahead of time. They didn't craft this thing. This wasn't their marketing team that came up with it.
Wow.
So 17 million people uploaded their videos to Facebook. So they started using the Facebook platform. And if you do the math, it's about $6.88. Each one of those things was a collection jar, essentially.
Wow.
But they left a lot of money on the table, you know, so you had to incentivize your audience or whoever you're calling out to go out, find the donation page, and donate. And with our platform, the pledge button's right there. So you know if they pledged, you can, you know, give that kind of friendly, guilty pressure to incentivize them. Come on, give me the $10, et cetera. This is for a great cause. So that's been our value proposition.
Nice. Cool. So I know you, like me, are pretty much a self-driven, very small company.
Yes.
I met your wife last night and one of your other employees.
That's correct.
So tell me the process when you got the idea. Where were you? What were you doing? Did you have a job? What was your career? And what really spurred you on to say, all right, we're going to dump all of my passion, all of my time, all of my money, and even bring your family in on it. What, talk to me a little bit about that process, of that entrepreneurial process.
Well, it's interesting, you know, anytime that you're undertaking a challenge like this, I look at it, just to give you the broad brush real quick before I get down into the granular details, it's like climbing a mountain. And I tell my family, because if people will sit there and go like, how long does it take to build an app? This is crazy, Jed. How long? And I'm like, well, you know, it's one thing if you can see the app and you can reverse engineer it, but to create a whole new social network experience is not very easy. And it becomes this kind of layer upon layer, like you're cooking a soup and you're laying on flavors. And what I used to describe was, it's like climbing a mountain, and from your vantage point from the base, you look up and you say, that's the peak, you know, and then you get up to that peak and you go, oh my God, that's the peak way up there. It's obscured by clouds or whatever. So you just have to persevere. But it all started on a snowy day in New York. A friend of mine was had to move his car from one side of the street to the other late one night.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to do
I'm very familiar with that.
We've been there. And he challenged his brother. And all of a sudden we're like, challenge app, that could be cool. And it was just an idea to do a Facebook app for people to challenge their friends and family to do something. It wasn't until like a few years, you know, maybe a year and a half into it, that we're building this thing, doing the demo, trying to figure out how we could really get real traction, scale, really make this resonate with people, that we looked at it from a charity standpoint, you know, and that just kind of came to me one time working and crafting these things, and just popped up like, wow, if you could, instead of it being a voting contest, which we do have on the platform with our winner takes all challenges, what happens if you create charity challenges and that vote button became a pledge button? And now you're basically voting with $1 or $2. You're voting with money.
What was that like for you when you like hit it? It's like, just a minute.
Great.
We're doing something for donations. We're not just building another app.
It was interesting because it actually happened right before the summer, before the ice bucket challenge. Right before it was actually early summer before my brother had come in into town, and it just seemed to me to really make sense. And I have a partner, and I spoke to him about it, and we, you know, he kind of just was like, I don't know, kind of poo-pooed the idea. We just said, well, we'll have the charity challenges. And it wasn't until South by Southwest last year that when I was talking to people, and our pitch was very smooth, it was really nice, but the charity challenges was the second item on it. And when I was speaking to people and just pitching on the street, I had claw marks in my arms from all the people that have causes back home. Some people championing them here, or maybe they just have a foundation themselves, but they're here working and representing another company. And they just said, oh my God, if we could have a platform like this, it could be a game changer. If we could use Challenge Star to help us raise money, because they're all just maxed out. They don't have manpower. They don't have resources. But they all are passionate and devoted to their causes. And something like this, where it could be free to onboard your people, free to do, there's no risk. And if you raise money, great, it's a rev share. We take a little percentage.
Sure.
If you don't, there's no risk to you. It's not like it costs you any money to come on board, just a little bit of time coming up with a challenge and maybe messaging your people. It just really opened our eyes, and we came back after South by Southwest, or I did, because I went alone last year. And we had already done our business plan. And so all of a sudden I started looking at the charity industry, $358 billion industry in 2014, reported to the IRS, that's just domestically. And we said, oh my God, forget about the social media ad spend market, forget about the mobile app market, which are, you know, tens of millions of dollars, that's great, but 358, you know, over their billions of dollars, but tens of billions, or $358 billion. You know, you just look at the graph there, you go, that's the pond we should be fishing in. And my background was interesting because my parents are very philanthropic. And so every year we had to decide, on Christmas time, we would present, we're a family of four, two sons, I have a brother my same age, and we'd have to present what was the charity we wanted to give the money to that we had saved up that year as a family. It was pretty much my parents saving the money. And then we'd split it four ways, and we'd give it to those different targets. And so it's always been a thing in my family. And so all of a sudden it was like, wow, this could really help so many people. And that's just what we want. That $358 billion could be $750 billion.
Yeah.
So
excellent.
Yeah, who doesn't like that?
Yeah. Well, as we discussed a few minutes ago, as we were prepping for this, the Maverick Way, one of the concepts, kind of the underlying concept of the Maverick Way, is that you can create something awesome on your own. You know, change something like this really does require an inspired leader, and that's why you're sitting here today, because, you know, we started talking at the barbecue yesterday. But nothing happens if you're not creating community, if you're not really looking at how to build a network. And clearly your app is all about, you know, if I'm doing a campaign, right, I'm going to be far more successful the better I am at the network. So what is the network? What does that mean to you? And how are you building this into the app?
You know, it's interesting. When I was when I first moved to Miami, I got hired. I then quickly, within a year and a half, I was going to be groomed to be the creative director at a very young age. I was in my early 20s. And then the person that was going to groom me, she was going to groom me over a year, left a month later. And all of a sudden, they're starting to look at corporate in New York. They're starting the hiring process. And I said, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm supposed to be the creative director. And all of a sudden, I realized I need to go sell myself to them. So at a very young age, I was 25 years old, I became creative director. And I didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I had gone from I remember at that age not even remembering the next day what I was doing the previous day, because you're just used to being told. So I bought a recorder and started recording on the way home what we had done, everyone's tasks, so that the next morning I could then listen on the way in and make sure I had the marching orders for everybody. And this was pre-iPhone day, so it was a little thing I got at Best Buy. And, you know, within 2 weeks, I had trained my brain. I didn't need the recorder anymore, or maybe a week. And one of the things my father told me, which was really, really just salient, right on point, was when I was saying, you know, just, you know, I'm trying to do the best job I can. He goes, just relax. I remember speaking to him. I remember exactly where I was. He goes, your job as a manager is to put people in positions to succeed. So that's what you're supposed to do.
Yes.
Put them in positions to succeed. And if you can do that, then you're fulfilling your job and your mandate. And that, to me, really just kind of, in a nutshell, clarified what my mission and mandate was. And from that point on, it became very clear on trying to set up a team and how you could do that. So by the time I was 30, I decided 5 years managing, let me go out on my own and try it. And then my wife came in with some great, you know, advice, you know, very important advice at the time when I was just going out on my own. And it was, don't try to learn everything. You need to build your network. So I built a virtual network and just trying to find people as far as China, Bangladesh, Vietnam, Santiago, Chile, people I went to school with, people I just go into chat rooms and meet and find, you know, like, who's the best in this room? You know, like, get out of here. Okay, I'll see you. And then you right. find people. I just, as you've noticed, I love to talk to people.
Yeah.
It doesn't change in the cyber room. So people would be like, it was funny. I'd reach out cold call because I find these people on these Reddits and even pre-Reddit days when, you know, and people would be like, how did you get my contact information? Because I'd just be like, do you know this sort of framework? I see you know 1.7 of this, you know, and they'd be like, and then you strike up a conversation. Some people, you know, it's a lot of no's and a lot of I'm already full time or I'm not interested, but, you know, you just keep on talking to people and you build that team. And so I built a virtual team. And I think that's the most important thing, is putting them in a position to succeed. You know, build that network community. And then one of the biggest things is if you can translate, which I'm very good at just because I have both art and business skills. My background's art, but I always had a business mind. Is translating what's up in your head down into paper, into actionable plans, into actionable mocks, saying this is what, you know, a picture says 1,000 words. You know, a video schematic, I'm very good at making animatics that show you, if I need to do animation, how to block it out. I never had video production background per se, but my mind understands it.
Sure.
And so using different tools that are available to you. Keynote's been wonderful.
I love Keynote.
Keynote's wonderful. You can sit there and just say, here's how I want this animated. I started working with 3D artists because I would just say yes to whatever project we got and figure out how to make it. We built like an animation across 3 countries and 15 business days. This company needed it. Yeah, they paid us really good money. It was like, yes, we can do it for that budget. I didn't have any 3D artists at the time. And from going from a 5-page Word script where we had to create the models and then animate this medical diagram within the body and skeletons and stuff. And we delivered one day ahead of the turnaround.
And that's one of the beautiful things about networking today is – you can actually work around the clock, and everybody gets to work on them, you know, during their daytime. So you're working here. You've got a team in India. You've got a team in Bangladesh. You got a team in China. You know, I mean, there's
I'm the like one not getting any sleep. It's because I'm up all the time for the American team, and then
I've actually talked to a lot of people who do that, like have set their alarm for 3 o'clock in the morning for a team, you know, Skype call or something.
Yeah. I've probably taken years off my life because I really sleep maybe 3-4 hours a night, and then I'll juice up on a 12-hour night like once a month or something
that. I do the same thing.
I'm always up. People know, like, Jed, he's up. Text him. He's up. He's definitely up.
Cool. So I told you about, I got a couple of questions for you. One of my favorite questions that I love to ask entrepreneurs, because every entrepreneur I know has these things. So tell me about that time as you're growing your business when you like woke up in the middle of the night, not for a conference call, but staring at the ceiling. I guess that's my thing that I do.
Right.
And you're absolutely terrified because you've dumped everything into it. And all of a sudden you're like, what happens if this doesn't work?
We had that. It was interesting enough. We had that actually with Apple, and it wasn't in the middle of the night. It was literally on. So when you're going through the app process, the approval process for, it's drastically different between Android and Apple. You know, Apple has become a lot more stringent, and I think it's actually rightfully so. Android's kind of Wild West. 6 hours, you're approved, you're going. Apple, we had to kind of rework some stuff, and their system for going through the compliance process, and especially our app, which involves payments and gameplay and donations and all this sort of stuff. I mean, it's not just a simple little point and click app. So there was things that they wanted us to do differently that we're violating on their policy, stuff that we had started early in the policy version numbers that had then changed as through build. So we learned, like, oh, we need to revisit the next time and keep on top of the policy because, you know, new policies come in. And so after 11 weeks of compliance, and we can't speak to anyone, and you're getting, posting on these message threads and asking these questions, even before we ever got to compliance, we're trying to ask Apple questions, and they're just kind of use the message system, and you get these copy and paste answers, and it was like, this is not helpful. This I can tell where you're pasting because the font's changing, you know, where you pasted it. And it's not answering the question that's very specific that I'm asking you, and I'm very good at keeping the answers, the questions very cogent and clear. And so I finally, after 11 weeks, a person contacts us and says, you know, please contact me. I need to speak to you about your app. And we're like, great, a human. So I go pick up the phone. You know, my team that are millennials are like, oh, you're picking up the phone? You call me. That's what we do, right? You talk on the phone.
Old school, baby.
Yeah, we're going to talk to these people. We finally got a number. And so, you know, I call up this gentleman at Apple. And he just goes, you know what? I'm sorry I had to say. Apple Legal has not a problem with us, like a specific aspect. It's kind of with your whole concept, your whole platform. And I remember that was like a sock in the stomach, you know, like it was basically saying, you know, you can't come up this way. And the way the analogy I used was that we've been crawling this path for years and asking questions, trying to ask, you know, the villagers and stuff like, do you know, is the mountain this way, the peak this way? And then at the very top of this path, we get this kind of sensei person that goes, you know, with the goatee, goes, you can't come up this way. You know, you're like, why aren't you at the bottom of the path? Yeah, right. Why am I? And his answer was basically, I was like, well, what is, you know, what, I won't bore you with the details, but what is maybe some of the solutions, next steps here? And he goes, have you ever considered building a web app? So he's basically saying you can't be on the app platform. And so it was on the Apple platform. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, No. So I just, you know, said, listen, there's a lot to take in right now. Why don't you go ahead and file the report so I can read the report? And may I call you back? You know, at the number, he goes, yeah, you can. I'm here as the mouthpiece to legal, so you call me whenever you want. Great. So at least now we had a human, and he seemed genuine and nice and sincere. And so I go to lunch. Mary had a lunch date with somebody, and so I went to the lunch, kind of still thinking about this stuff, running my mind, trying to have a good lunch with this person. Come back, look at the report, and as I'm looking at the report and peeling back the layers of it, it just seemed like it wasn't that big of a deal, what their deal was. And so I kind of crafted this little list, put down like 10 different things in order of priority that, you know, number one, what I think would solve it, number two, which is a little more drastic, number three, which is a little more drastic, etc. And then I called this gentleman, and I said, I went through my, you know, my intro spiel and just said, listen, this doesn't seem like that big of a deal. I believe that this one sentence and putting in our terms would solve it, such as X, Y, Z. And I read out the sentence that I jotted down. And the guy's like, yeah, that's, you go ahead and resubmit. You know, it's kind of like, you know, like, you know, you go ahead and do it. And so I'm like, okay. Right. And then, so then I said, all right, I'm going to work on his personal side. Does he seem like a real sincere person? So I said, you know what? Forget about all this stuff with the app and everything. You know, thanks. We will resubmit. But what'd you think about the app experience? What'd you think about just man-to-man? What'd you think? Uh-huh. You know, we've been working a long time on this. And he goes, oh, actually, I didn't even open the app. I don't see the app. You know, I never saw it, you know, and that wow. sort of stuff. So I just talk with him. And then I just say, you know, I have to tell you that what you're doing is fantastic. I think this is going to make our experience better. And everything I'm saying is completely sincere because I really believe so. And I said, you know, one of the stigmas before was because I've been developing apps for Apple. You know, I started my first one 4 or 5 years ago. Back then, it was 500,000 apps in the App Store.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone would say, but how many of them worked? Like, none right. of them worked, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, thank God you guys are finally locking that down and making sure these things work. So yeah. Waters needs to work. And he all of a sudden is like, you know, you see there? You're the type of developer we want. You know, that's exactly, thank you so much. And all of a sudden, he's a championing us. And I just said, awesome. Listen, can you do me a favor? You're there. You know, we're not there in your office. Can you just, like, walk over to legal and tell him what I said and just talk to somebody over there and just see if this, you know, holds water? I just don't see this as a big deal. He goes, yeah, you know, I can do that for you. And then it was like 4 p.m., 7 p.m., I'm barbecuing on my patio with my family, and I get a call from him. I see it, you know, from California come in. And it's him, and he goes, you know what? I went over and spoke to someone legal. They said, yeah, you're right. It's no big deal. Just change that text and resubmit. 2 days later, we're in.
Oh, my God.
So all of a sudden, this guy had been told us and given the marching orders to go back down the mountain and go right. climb the web app mountain. And if you hadn't just said, let's, you know, push back a little bit or look at your notes and really kind of just look at them with fresh eyes and say, this doesn't really make sense to me, yeah. you know, and really just push back a little respectfully and professionally, then we would have been going back down the mountain and rebuilding something completely different.
So
amazing.
But you talk to him like a human being.
Yeah, and you know, I like to treat people like a human. Yeah.
Well, yeah. yeah. And that's. But that, I mean, that's huge.
That's another thing I learned from my father. Yeah, yeah. My father was like, he always taught me that people want to help, you know, so, you know, they naturally yeah. want to help. So you don't want to turn them off. You don't want to get combative. And I've tried to teach my wife this, so yeah. she knows it. But it's not about winning the battle, you know? You want to win the war.
People, you are absolutely right, and that is such an important thing. People want to contribute. That's just human yeah. nature, you yeah. know? I believe very strong that we're born generous and loving and beautiful
right, right.
and as we get older we learn through getting beaten up in society
yes,
to
yeah.
shut down and protect ourselves
right
and you literally ask this guy to do you a favor and he's yeah. like, you know what, yeah
right and, right and when I spoke to him like that he just really said, you know what, this makes sense and let's try it, you know. And
mm-hmm.
then he's been a great champion for us. When I've had questions I'll reach out to him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's, we, you know, after I spoke to him on the phone, Nick was listening, one of my, you know, support guys, my associates, and he's like, oh, you just got to champion an Apple. You know, and I'm like, yeah, we need that.
That's huge.
Been with the message board, which has not been served me too well to date, you know. So
yeah.
That was cool. A big thing. That was a big thing.
All right. One more question for you.
Sure.
Today, what is the biggest challenge that you are facing today, and how can we, the Maverick community, this community that I'm building, what can we do to help you?
I think, you know, you could say that it's signups, you know, getting signups and people to try it. You want people to taste the food in your restaurant, mm-hmm. right? And if they enjoy the food and you've been working on that menu for a while, you then want them to tell people that, you know, all their friends, word of mouth, yep. however it is, that, hey, this is a great place to eat. So I think it's that, but it distills down to breaking through the clutter, mm-hmm. really, at the end of the day, breaking through all that noise, getting the opportunity for people to taste it. And if you can showcase it, those menus and those dishes on you know, media like this and media mm-hmm. opportunities like this, that's how you get the message out. So it's
awesome. That. And where exactly are you today? You know, where is the app
In the stage, will you say?
Yeah.
So we're early stage. We just came live in the App Store end of January. We've been live in Android since the fall. And we needed to wait for those before we could even open up shop. We're still what I would call friends and family, but we're now letting people know nationally via this platform of South by Southwest that we're open for national signups. And then next weekend, we're up in Boston for the Associated Fundraising Professionals, which is the international fundraising conference or whatever, up in Boston. That's one of our big target demographics, obviously fundraisers and nonprofits, to let them know, hey, charities, meet Challenge Star. And then our plan is to launch at the Miami Signature Tech event, eMERGE Americas, April 15th, so next month.
Cool. You're on the road a lot, man, a lot of miles.
It's good to be at this point. After being in a bunker for so long, you know, to finally be out. And we just
You are a social dude, man. I can't imagine what that was like. Like, get me out of here. Get me out.
Well, I'm also a hard worker, so I can sit there and you know, I say, like, oh, you need to get on Facebook and all that stuff, so I can go.
Nice.
Not antisocial, but you know, I can work hard, play hard, you know.
Yeah.
But when I'm out in the street, there's nothing I like better than just everyone has a story. I want to hear their stories too. Yeah. Everyone has a story.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us and telling us your story. So tell us again, Challenge Star, how do we find it? You're on Android and
iPhone. And that's iPhone, right. We're both tablets and mobile. We built this platform really well. And we've worked really hard on it. So you can get it pretty much on any device that you have. And there's even a way for people to participate via web, because when people share to you, then you can go ahead and support them with pledges just within your Facebook, just within your Twitter. You don't even have to download it. But it's challengestar.com. And if you have any causes or charities that you want to champion, challengestar.com, register your cause right at the top. That's really the genesis of any conversation, any opportunity to start raising money and raising awareness with our platform.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, man.
You're welcome.
Really great
to
meet you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
My pleasure. And we'll follow up, you know.
You're coming down to Miami soon,
right? I'll be down in Miami soon. Yeah, we'll definitely.
I may be staying in Tarrytown next year.
Oh, cool.
That's where I was at last year.
Well, yeah. That's where I'm living now. And maybe we'll go have some papas in Calle Ocho.
That's right.
Please. Don't get too upset about my pronunciations, because
that's all right. That's all good. I speak like a gringo too when I'm over there.
All right, awesome. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, Blaine.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is episode one of The Maverick Way at South by Southwest. Keep tuning in and come on back. We'll talk to you soon. Well, welcome to episode two of The Maverick Way at South by Southwest. I'm sitting here with Jean Ann Booth, the founder and CEO of Unoliware. And how did you describe that earlier? That was perfect.
Oh, when somebody asked me what it was we do.
Yeah.
It's a smartwatch for grandma.
It's a smartwatch for grandma. So tell me what that is. What is, well, first off, we'll get a close-up so you can see this. This is actually a really good-looking watch. So what is a smartwatch for grandma, and why does grandma need a smartwatch?
Yeah, so it's a smartwatch for grandma because it's very smart. And what it actually does is it provides discrete support for falls, medication reminders, and a guard against wandering in a classically styled watch, but using a speech interface rather than buttons like, you know, the pendants and stuff.
Right, right.
Okay. Unlike a regular medical alert product, we go where the wearer goes 24/7. We actually don't require a smartphone because it's actually built into this watch right here.
So I don't have to connect it to my iPhone via Bluetooth and all that.
That's right. Because inside this watch is cellular, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, not for phones, but for hearing aids and telemedicine devices.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my God.
But wait, I'm not done.
That thing is so small. Yeah, we'll get a close-up of this, because that's really mind-blowing.
It also has a 9-axis accelerometer and continuous speech recognition.
Okay. Tell me what an accelerometer is.
So an accelerometer is a measurement of movement. And so we use that accelerometer in multiple axes, so multiple dimensions, to tell the difference between I'm being very Italian and talking with my hands and actually falling.
So if, and you said it's got AI in it. So if grandma is an Italian and talks with her hands a lot, and all of a sudden the watch is not moving at an unusual time for like not the time grandma would be taking a nap or something, the watch would be alerted?
Yep. So actually what it does is the whole conversation between the smartwatch for grandma and grandma is where the conversation takes place. So the watch doesn't tell other people about grandma. The watch talks to grandma, which is really, really important to us. It's dignity, right?
Yes.
And so if, for instance, the watch believes that grandma fell, then it'll request permission to speak by buzzing on her wrist like a cell phone on silent.
Okay. Yeah.
She'll actually give it permission to speak either out loud by saying yes or by tapping the display once for yes and twice for no. If she gives the permission, it'll say, do you need help? And she can say yes or no. So that's one of the things that it does in learning the difference between an Italian grandma talking a lot with her hands and when she may have actually fallen, which is going to look a little bit different but may have some of those same mm-hmm. movements in it.
Wow. That's a lot of technology in a really little package.
It is. It's a lot of technology in a small package.
Wow. Cool. So, I we've talked a little bit about this before. How did you get the idea? Why did you, you're an electrical engineer by trade,
yep.
right? Why did you, how did you get this idea? What, where did you decide that you had this need for a smartwatch for grandma?
Well, so my, I was actually retired when I started UnaliWare. I came out of retirement to start it because my mom was just turning 80 and, you know, she's cognitively present, but she's very frail. My mom is a really small woman mm-hmm. and, you know, I was just worried. So we looked at all of the things that exist in the marketplace for people, and, you know, the buttons and all of that kind of stuff. And she actually said to me, she goes, don't you get that for me? I'm not buying it. So teeth together the whole nine yards, you know, which right. meant I really, 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 really mean this. If you get this for me, I'm not wearing it. Right. And I, you know, I was a little taken aback by the strength of her reaction, but I actually came back later because my mom was a model and I'm the spitting image of my dad's sister. Wish I looked like my mom, but I don't. But she is one of those, especially in her generation, she's one of those women who's just totally the whole package. Everything, you know, the earrings match the shoes, match the, you know, mm. everything is just, mm-hmm. you know, that way. And when I thought about it, it was like, you know, I'm not willing to wear the button. So why am I surprised that my mom, the model, won't right. wear the button? Because I'm a nerd. So that was when I actually called her up a week or two later and said, okay, Mom, how about if we do this? I'll make you a watch. Looks good. You simply talk to it so there's no button. It doesn't need a smartphone because she doesn't want a smartphone. Mm-hmm. And how about that? And she says, well, I don't know. And then that's where the entrepreneurial background comes in because I said, that's it. You're hired. And she's our senior user experience advisor.
Awesome. That's really great. So where are you today? I know, well, you're wearing one on your wrist.
I am.
And that is the Bling model. So you've got a bunch of different models.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've been working really hard on getting prototypes and stuff. And it's funny, I've been talking to you about this and seen some progress. And even in the few months that I've known you, I keep watching this thing get smaller and smaller. So where are you right now?
So we just closed our seed funding round, which is the money that we needed to actually tool the manufacturing of the watches. So with this money, we are getting ready to start our first beta pilots. So we've got about 600 people through our Kickstarter and people who signed up on our website who will be wearing the Kanega watch and telling us how it's working for them. And I can't wait.
I can imagine, yeah. Well, congratulations. That's
Thank
really
you.
Exciting. That's fantastic. So I've got a couple of questions that I love to ask all of my guests.
Mm-hmm.
And the one is, so, you know, with every entrepreneur and you dive in, you know,
yep.
time, energy, money, life, your home. You've got your home is your office. You've got what? How many? Four or five people now jammed into a back room in your house?
Yeah, right now there's four people who come to work in the house every day. Yeah. But we're moving out. We're growing.
Yeah. You are growing. I'm not trying to denigrate that, but so you're all in, right?
Yeah.
You're all in. And so tell me that time in the business when you like woke up in the middle of the night or whatever it was, mm-hmm. where you were really, truly terrified that this might not be happening.
You know, for me, and this is actually my fourth startup company. For me, those times are usually early in a company's mm-hmm. life. You know, the way I describe the entrepreneurial journey is the younger the company, the higher the highs and the lower the lows, right? And as you begin to get closer and closer to that path of having product on the market, being a real company, you know, it kind of dampens out and you stabilize a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happens with those horrible times when you're thinking you're not going to make it. So for me, it was certainly, you know, a couple of times in our earlier days, first in trying to raise our very first funding, and then a couple of times later as we were, you know, we were basically developing to our funding rather than getting funded to develop, which is what I would prefer.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so those are those times when I would be thinking, I hope this is going to make it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Cool. Okay, and then my other question is, we talked a little bit about where are you today.
Yeah.
What's the number one problem facing you right now? And what can, if there's anything the Maverick community can do, what can we do to help you get over the hump and get you to the next level?
Okay. So let me actually answer that in the context of your previous question. So, you know, those really scary moments, right, when you're not really sure that it's going to work, for me, they were all related to funding. And the way that I would always look at it is, if I still have paths to go down, if I have not exhausted every possibility, then it must not be time yet to give up, right? So that would be the way that I would just keep going and keep going and keep going. And now that we've closed our first seed round, you know, now all of these people that I know around town are all very excited. They're like, I've never seen anybody push at it like you did, you know, and that's exactly the way it should be. And of course, I'm thinking in the back of my head, why does it have to be that way? Mm-hmm. But anyway, it does go together. So to the extent that that helps anybody in the Maverick community, if you have not exhausted all your possibilities, then you're not done yet.
That's really great. And that's from an experienced entrepreneur
yep.
of many, many companies. So as we're talking about the Maverick community, I know you are on the road a lot.
Mm.
And so how are you building, you know, a Unali community? How are you growing? You said you used a GoFundMe campaign or a Kickstarter?
We did a Kickstarter.
Okay. And how was that? How did you create that?
So we did a Kickstarter, not as much for the senior demographic, because if you think about it, the buyer of this sort of product is actually somebody like me, a woman between the ages of 45 and 60.
Yep.
I'm not telling you where I am, but, you know, the wearer...
I fall in there, too.
The wearer is somebody like my mom, right? So kind of that 75 plus tends to be my demographic. Typically, neither my buyer nor my wearer is on Kickstarter. But the things that I really wanted out of Kickstarter were diversification of our focus groups and diversification of our beta group that we're just getting ready mm-hmm. to send product out to. And that went phenomenally well because out of the Kickstarter campaign, people joined our beta. People paid us to be in our focus groups. People paid us to be in the beta who have MS, they have Lou Gehrig's disease,
oh, wow.
they have Parkinson's, adults with Down syndrome, some blind people because of the verbal directions that the Kinego Watch can provide. And so it really enabled us to expand, into all independent but vulnerable markets, which is really our target.
Mm-hmm.
Seniors are certainly a huge part of it, and
sure.
that's the part, you know, that I kind of go pitter-patter about because that's mom.
Right.
But all of the rest of those guys can benefit from what it is that we're bringing as well, and getting them into the beta means that we will deliver the right watch for all of those independent but vulnerable populations.
Very cool. That's a laudable, goal.
Yeah.
So one last thing that I'm really curious about. So you're growing, you're moving
yep.
out, you're getting space.
Right.
You're hiring people. Tell us a little bit about your management philosophy.
Management philosophy overall.
Overall.
Okay. So the culture that we build is one of transparency,
mm-hmm.
And one of honesty. So I guess my management style is a lot more, we hire really great people
mm-hmm.
who are very, very motivated by what we do. And then give everybody the opportunity to deliver what it is that we're delivering. And so we hold each other accountable. And that allows us to make all that progress that you've actually seen over the past
right.
couple of months
yeah.
is that we do that sort of thing. So it's a little bit different. I mean, for there are certainly, you know, A players like to come and work in my environment because
mm-hmm.
that's all we have. And it becomes really obvious really quickly if you're not delivering. And that gets uncomfortable. So nobody wants to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. We work hard, we have fun too. But we also at the same time make sure that while we're working hard, we're also still doing those things that you need to do in your life. Right. So like for me, my exercise is really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I still get my exercise in. It's good for everybody that I get my exercise in too. but at the same time, you know, there's other things. You know, I give back to the community by providing technical support in robotics competitions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you could say, well, you've got a startup and it's totally consuming your life and you don't have time for that. But I do, and it's an example of the kinds of things that other members of my team have as well. And I don't want to leave you with the thought that everybody works a 40-hour week, because they totally don't. But at the same time, while we're working hard and playing hard, we're also still making sure there's that connection to your family, to your friends,
mm-hmm.
and to those parts of the community that are really important to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were here at South by Southwest judging a
That's
pitch
right.
contest, is that
That's
right?
That's right, yes.
And just a couple days before that, you were...
I was doing robotics in San Antonio, yeah.
Yeah, for high school kids.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you're out there, you're in the community, you're
yep.
seeing what's coming up, and yeah, I love when you were telling me about some of these kids
oh,
that
yeah.
you judged last week. It's just mind-blowing.
And it's not, I mean, you know, on the one hand, it's altruistic. But on the other hand, it's not completely altruistic, because last year in one of the high school robotics competition, I found a high school kid that was so phenomenal. I actually hired him as an intern in my company last summer.
Cool.
And I hope as I go to championships again this year that I'm going to find this summer's intern.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, so it's great stuff. It's great for the kids. It's great for the community. It's also great for us.
Yeah. But that's the beauty of the whole thing. I mean, that's you're creating, you know,
yeah.
a holistic environment where you're giving, you're receiving, and that's how we grow. And I
yeah.
think that's one of the beautiful things about the entrepreneurial culture that we have in the United States.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think the other place where especially longtime entrepreneurs who've had a lot of experience give back is that most of us tend to be very available for meeting with somebody, having a coffee,
mm-hmm.
you know, can I help you with whatever your challenge is? And it, you know, it doesn't have to be a big hairy deal, right? It can
right.
just be a coffee.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
How can people find you? How can, you know, I know you're like almost ready to ship your first set of beta watches out.
Yep.
So if somebody's out there curious and really wants to know more about you, how do we find you? How do they get a hold of you? And maybe even, you know, how do I get on a list for the next round of watches to go out?
And the answer to all of those questions is almost exactly the same. So our the company name is Unali Wear, UNALIWEAR. Mm-hmm. Unali is Cherokee for friend. And our watch brand, as you heard me say, is Kanega. Kanega is Cherokee for speak, so we're the friend who speaks to you. So if you go to our website, www.unaliwear.com, mm-hmm. There's a sign-up list still on there for beta. And even when we start beta, we'll still be taking some applications because there's different phases in beta. Mm-hmm. And you can reach me there. And then our Twitter handle is at Unaliwear.
Great.
So that's awesome. Easy.
All right. Well, Jean-Ann, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Mavericks out there, thank you, Jean-Ann Booth at Unaliwear. Find her at unaliwear.com. And I hope you have a great South by Southwest or what's left of it.
Thank you.
All right.
My name's Scott Richards, founder of Cloud Safety Systems. Why? Because the world's a better place with you in it. We're going to save a lot of lives and improve the quality of life for people all around the world. We're going to start by improving the quality of life for seniors as they age. We're going to give them back their independent lifestyle for a bit longer than they have it by giving them personal fall protection, which is in the form of a belt that's fitted with technology that detects when a fall has begun, and using the speed of airbag technology inflates to protect them before they hit the ground. It's revolutionary, and I'm looking for help.
Help are you looking for?
I'm looking for entrepreneurs with a lot of scar tissue, both success and failure, that see what I see in this project and are willing to take a look and come talk to me about helping me bring this across the finish line to the commercialization of the product. The exit for this will be an exit to large corporate America. There's particular reasons for that. Come see me. We'll talk about it. But there's a lot of things to discuss, and what I need is somebody that has the experience in taking physical things like I'm creating and bringing them to market and raising the money to do the research, to finalize that product, and then to exit to the large corporate entity.
Beautiful.
I thank you. Again, Scott Richards, Cloud Safety Systems. You can reach me on email, scott@cloudsafetysystems.com. Visit me at the website, cloudsafetysystems.com. We're changing the world, and I'm looking for somebody to do it with me.